Every year is a good year for jazz. Whether it's the Duke or Ella or someone newer to the scene, you'll find all your jazz favorites on A Good Year for Jazz with your host, Nathan. Each week, travel the calendar back to 1945, 59, or even 2015 to hear what was happening in the world of jazz. I'll meet you right here Monday night, 7 to 9, on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Hello and welcome back to Drink on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Up next, we've got an interview with Jake Wade from Bear Paw River Brewing Company in Wasilla. Hey, Jake, how you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. So I see on, judging by the pictures you guys have posted on Facebook, that you've got some sort of expansion in the offing. So you want to tell our listeners about that?
Yep. So this summer we purchased a lot in downtown Wasilla. You know, we have a Wasilla address, but we are currently in the Matsup Borough, so we're not actually within city limits. So we're going to be building a new facility there. It will allow us to focus more on distribution, but also on retail. So it's kind of going to give us enough room to expand both sides of the operation.
Sounds good. So are you planning to eventually close your current location and shift all operations to this one, or are you going to have two locations?
The plan is to have two locations. What we'll actually be doing is obtaining a second brewery license. You know, we like our current location. It's a great spot. The Palmer-Wasilla Highway where we're located is it's a very busy road in the valley. And we have a great group of locals, and we think that, you know, we can sustain both. So there'll be some equipment and things that we'll be moving over to the new location, but the 4605, what we have now, will be focused more on the one-offs and the experimental stuff, because we'll keep our 10-barrel system there.
And what size system are you looking at for the new outfit, 20-barrel?
We're going to do a 30.
30, okay.
Yeah, so the way it is now in our current facility is we have some 10-barrel tanks, fermenters and bright tanks, and we have 30-barrel fermenters and bright tanks. So we triple brew into 30-barrel tanks. And so we thought that since those are already here in Wasilla, that instead of, say, doing a 20, we might as well just jump up to the 30 since we already have that fermentation capacity.
Sounds good. Whenever anybody buys or expands, I always think whatever you think you need, buy bigger, because history seems to show that you'll wish you had. And you're going to use this new facility to focus primarily on your beers that you're packaging, that you're canning, I take it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, we're certainly going to be increasing the brew house size, fermentation space. We're going to buy a new canner. Eventually, we do want to get into 12 packs. So we do want to put focus on distribution. But at the same time, we're going to build out a pizza pub. So we'll have food and beer. And so it'll be a nice, comfortable space. It's not going to be a huge menu, but, you know, 5 to 8 pizzas, soups and salads, and just kind of keep it pizza focused. And we think that that'll be a hit.
Hey, you don't need a huge menu if it's good.
Yeah, no, I think keeping it simple. I come from the beer side of things, not the restaurant side of things. And so we're going to get the appropriate help to get it launched appropriately. But
you're moving into a whole new world now.
Right, exactly. There's going to be, you know, just thinking about the beer side, we've been open for 4 years now, and there has been a significant amount of challenges just over the course of 4 years. And so I would imagine that there's going to be similar types of challenges on the restaurant side.
So what's your timeline look like? I realize timelines are always subject to change, but, you know, ballpark, when are you thinking that you'll have things built and open?
Yeah, so currently we are in the sort of architectural phase where we've been going back and forth with the architect and the contractor. And so these plans are relatively close to getting completed. The architect and contractor said that we will be able to break ground in May, which means a late 2020 opening. They say November. And so, you know, we're, you know, November, December, which will be right about perfect. That'll be our 5-year anniversary in December, and that'll be a really fantastic 5-year celebration.
Any issues? You got any concerns with permitting or anything, licensing with the city? Everything? I always know that seems to always be the wild card sometimes with these sort of endeavors.
We started communicating early, and so we have everything squared away with AMCO and with the city. And so far, so good. That doesn't mean that there might not be a hiccup. So far, it's been great. You can't actually obtain your federal licensing until you have a brick and mortar building.
Right.
So the federal licensing will actually be the kind of the last step. Yeah. So far, the city has been very welcoming, and we've went in there a few months ago and sat down with the city planners and the mayor, and they are happy to see a brewery come into town. So yeah, looking forward to building a great relationship with them.
Sounds good. So once again, for our listeners, will you tell them where exactly this is going to be located?
The address is 240 East Railroad Avenue. And that is, it's basically the Parks Highway and Kinnick Goose Bay. It's very visible from the parks. So the Railroad Avenue is a frontage road of the Parks Highway. And so, yeah, downtown Wasilla, there happened to be a really great 2.2 acre pad that was available. We kind of took the jump and went for it.
Great. So what else is happening at the brewery besides pushing on the big expansion? Like you said, you got your anniversary coming up here pretty shortly, right?
Yep, anniversary coming up. We have a lot of fun beers going. I mean, that's the positive thing about kind of being the slower season is we're able to do the new beers. And so we've got a variety of lagers on tap right now. We have our Old Matanuska Made Russian Imperial Stout. They'll be coming out in December. We also have a Wee Heavy that's turned out to be 11%.
Oh,
it's been aging.
That sounds good. I love me a Wee Heavy.
I do too. It's been aging in a bourbon barrel for about a year now. So we'll be releasing that one as well.
Is that one going to be bottled on draft only? What's your plans for
We're going to bottle it.
Okay.
Yeah, there'll be both. There'll be mostly bottles, but some kegs of draft available.
Well, I'm going to ask you to put a bottle aside for me because I really
Absolutely.
Would like to taste that one. What about you're releasing your anniversary ale again this year?
Yeah, the date's a little bit to be determined yet. I think it's looking like December 14th is going to be our sort of anniversary / Christmas party. So probably December 14th.
Okay. Well, if anybody's up in your neck of the woods, they definitely should check that out. I've had your prior anniversary ales, and they were excellent. So I'm sure this year's will be really good, too.
And it's one of the more fun parties that we have because it's not just the anniversary, but it's also kind of the holiday party. So it has a good kind of friendly spirit. People bring crock pots, and we got a Christmas tree. And so it's just a real good time.
Sounds like a great one. So what else is happening at the brewery?
So my dad, Eric Wade, he wrote a book called Cabin, An Alaska Wilderness Dream, and he just came out. We had our kind of a little party for him in the tap room on Saturday, and it is his story, and it's all about the Bearpaw River, our family cabin, and where the name the Bearpaw River Brewing Company came from, and all the inspiration from it is packed into this book that my dad wrote, and it is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and in the tap room.
Sounds like a great idea for a Christmas gift for anybody who's interested in the history of that part of the country.
Perfect Christmas gift.
I should ask you, I guess, about the big news, which is that Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival is kaput, at least for this year. I'm sure you guys saw that.
Yeah.
That was kind of a surprise, kind of a bolt out of the blue. I don't know if you guys have heard any rumblings.
It's kind of a love-hate thing, you know, because when I got the application for it, the first thing I did was send it to my partners and said, does anyone else want to do this year? Or, you know, does anyone want to be there except me? You know? Yeah, it's really interesting. I think it was 26 years going or something. And so I have heard rumors of the guild possibly trying to figure out a way to still make it happen. But it's so soon now that it would be hard to kind of mobilize a new festival. So
yeah, it's going to be tough to put anything together.
Yeah, they were selling out. I don't know if it was a supplier issue, if people, you know, that's always been rumored that people are getting tired of it and wanting to drop out. But I don't know. We were going to go.
I think most people, from what I heard, most people were. I mean, I've always had my issues with it a little, too, because of the format. So we'll see. Hopefully the guild maybe can pull something together, if not this year, at least for the future.
Yeah, I hope so. I think that would be the best direction for the festival.
Well, hey, Jake, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, and good luck with the expansion, and good luck with your upcoming brews here.
Absolutely, Bill. I appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell. We'll be right back with our next segment.
This is Sal Cassano, host of Dead Musicians. Join me from 7 to 9 each Saturday night to hear all your favorites from yesteryear. Let's celebrate all the late greats together here on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Next up, let's talk beer style. And one of the best beer styles for this time of year is barley wines. Given that the cold, dark days of winter have finally settled in here in Alaska, this seems an opportune time to talk about barley wines. Barley wine is the strongest style of beers, and while it isn't always literally as strong as wine, it typically is stronger than beers in the style referred to as strong or old. The first beers we now think of as barley wine sprang from the British farmhouse brewing tradition, with its origins in the mid to late 18th century in breweries attached to the great aristocratic houses of England. At first, such beers were too expensive to produce on a commercial basis. Using new techniques to produce pale malt, these breweries began to brew these beers exclusively for the use of these wealthy households. These beers would be aged in wood for a year or more before serving and were brewed, quote, to answer the like purpose of wine, end quote, at the table. This was considered important in the days when frequent warfare between England and the wine-producing countries to the south could interrupt wine supplies for extended periods of time. In 1854, Bass began producing a single-brew barley wine they called simply Number One, its label adorned with a single red diamond. This diamond was registered as Britain's second trademark, following the still familiar Bass Ale red triangle. Bass Number One was brewed almost continuously, with a 10-year break from 1944 to 1954, until its discontinuation in 1995. It remains the standard, though today only in memory, against which other British barley wines are measured. But while the heritage of British-style barley wine is long and distinguished, they are not the only interpretations of this classic style. While its roots are in British traditions, barley wine as a style has enjoyed a substantial second flowering among American craft brewers, beginning with the production of Old Foghorn Ale by Anchor Brewing Company in 1975, followed shortly afterwards by Sierra Nevada's Bigfoot. For brewers, barley wine is a difficult and expensive beer to produce, requiring great amounts of materials, procedural vigilance, and time, which is the fifth vital element, along with malt, hops, water, and yeast, needed to produce a great barley wine. Like its early cousins, Old and Strong Ales, barley wine is intended to be laid down, the fortitude of its flavors sometimes requiring a year or more to mellow into an enjoyable integration. Some versions, such as the legendary Thomas Hardy Ale, can be cellared for 25 years or more. So what do they taste like? Barley wine in the British traditions are typically malt-forward, tasting slightly sweet and with plenty of vinous and woody notes. American-style barley wines typically have a much greater hop presence. However, just because a barley wine is produced by an American brewery does not mean it will be in the American style. Plenty of American craft brewers produce English-style barley wines. Either style may be barrel-aged. If the barrels used previously held some other spirit, that will bring added complexity to the flavor profile. Both styles have strengths ranging from 8% alcohol by volume to greater than 18%. This high strength often means they will be served in smaller glasses. What foods do they pair well with? The traditional match for an English barley wine is aged Stilton blue cheese, as the strong flavor of the cheese can stand up to the equally strong beer. Another choice might be a bread pudding, especially one with a sauce that utilized whiskey or rum as its base. American barley wines are bitterer, so they might pair better with a slightly less assertive cheese, say a good cheddar, one aged for at least a year. Or try them with a steak or burger which has had blue cheese crumbled on it. Finally, they make a wonderful pairing with fruitcake. Yes, it may not be widely known, but you can actually eat fruitcake, and I'm sure a nice glass of barley wine would make it even more palatable. If you would like to try a local version of this beer style, there are many to choose from. St. Elias Brewing produces its award-winning Moose Juice barley wine each year. Cassock's Brewery offers its Buffalo Head barley wine on tap and in 22-ounce bottle. Midnight Sun Brewing in Anchorage offers both its Arctic Devil barley wine and its Termination Dust barley wine in bottles. However, the White Whale of Alaska brewed barley wines is certainly Anchorage Brewing Company's A Deal with the Devil. This beer has won numerous awards, is barrel-aged for at least a year, and clocks in at over 18% alcohol by volume. Bottles of it are expensive and hard to come by, but if you ever get a chance to sample it, I would advise you not to pass it up. To say that it is sublime is an understatement, and it must be tasted to be believed. That's it for our coverage of barley wine. Up next, we'll talk about choosing beers for the holidays. The holidays are traditionally a time when we gather together with our friends and family and indulge in some excellent meals. And during the holidays, there's a role for beer to play. And I want to focus on selecting beers which will pair well with traditional holiday foods. Let's talk about some beer styles which pair well with the traditional holiday meal of roast turkey and all the trimmings. First up, our Oktoberfest are Märzen beers. Typically released in early fall, these beers pair nicely with a wide variety of snacks and starters, including roasted and salted nuts and pumpkin seeds, as well as fresh, mild, or sweet cheeses. Stronger imperial versions easily carry over into the rest of the meal. You'll find their understated but interesting flavor profile pairs well with almost any course. Next, consider a Belgian-style Saison or farmhouse ale. These bright, spicy, and crisp golden-hued beers are champagne-like in effervescence and perfect for the season. With hints of citrus peel and ginger, farmhouse ales and saisons have a firm balance of bitter and sweet. They pair nice with salty or seed-covered crackers served with strong, funky cheeses, light salads as a first course, and seasonal fall desserts. As part of a main course accompaniment featuring roast chicken or turkey, you'll find the subtle complexities of this style worth journeying through a meal with. Also Belgian-inspired are golden strong ales like Duvel. These light-colored golden ales are perfectly suited for a first course that includes a bright salad highlighting fresh green apples, dried cranberries, and a poppy seed vinaigrette. With its added sugars, Belgian-style golden strong ale is bubbly, sweet, and has a spicy Belgian yeast character with subtle notes of banana and clove. Serve it with a dessert course between bites of apple or cherry pie, or offer to those who would typically choose a Chardonnay to go with their dinner. They will appreciate this beer throughout the meal. Beer brewed from rye also deserves serious holiday consideration. Rye beers have a malty sweetness and a rich rye color, along with a spicy and delightful bitter citrusy bite that makes a good first course selection with strong cheeses and salty snacks, like those on a traditional charcuterie board. It also stands up nicely to the Thanksgiving plate without getting lost amid rich and savory flavors typical of the meal. Gravy-laden plates with bread stuffing and roasted garlic mash are ideal pairings for a Belgian-style quadruple, an earthy, complex, and malt-forward beer. Equally interesting as a dessert pairing with caramel or molasses-forward desserts like pecan pie or sweet potato casserole, this brew is one to savor from the main course through the end of the meal. Strongly smelling of caramelized banana with a spicy clove flavor that becomes more noticeable as it warms, an Imperial Weizenbock is almost a dessert in itself. Pouring a rich dark honey or caramel color, it's ideally served with banana bread pudding and vanilla ice cream, alongside creme brulee, or as a carbonated counterweight to the classic New Orleans dessert, Bananas Foster, with some cinnamon spice whipped cream. The beer is a unique and intriguing way to finish a meal. Imperial stouts have a deep roastiness balanced by chocolatey bitterness and hints of anise. Serve this style alone as an after-dinner treat or with rich chocolate ice cream, coffee and cinnamon almond biscotti, or with custard pies like sweet potato and pumpkin for a memorable end to your dinner party. No list of holiday beer pairings would be truly complete without mentioning barley wine. Often aged in bourbon barrels, these rich and raisiny beers are heavy on the malts. Truly meant for sipping, barley wine moves over into booze territory and will likely appeal to fans of caramel and malt-dominant spirits. These thick and decadent beers are desserts in and of themselves, though in Britain they traditionally are paired with aged Stilton cheese. If you find yourself as a guest rather than the host of the holiday meal, may I strongly suggest that instead of the customary bottle of wine, you consider bringing a bottle of beer? A beer from Belgium or brewed in the Belgian style, packaged in a handsome 750-milliliter cork bottle, makes a wonderful presentation. And if you're a beer lover like me, it also ensures that there will be a decent craft beer to drink alongside your own meal. Whichever style or styles of beer you choose to accompany your holiday meals, I hope you all enjoy the season. We'll be right back with our concluding segment. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here in Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Shaylin Cochran here, reporter and host at KDLL. You know, one of the things I like most about public radio is the time we get just to learn, explore, and talk. Join us Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. to be a part of the Kenai Conversation, 60 minutes dedicated to learning, exploring, and talking right here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.
Hello and welcome back to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. And as always, we'll wrap things up with beer gear. Turkey Day is past, which means it's now time to get really serious about Christmas shopping. If you're the family or friend of a beer lover, here are some gift ideas to consider. First, if the beer lover in question is a home brewer, consider giving them a gift card for home brew supplies or equipment. If you want to go local, Arctic Brewing Supply in Anchorage has a great selection, and they ship everywhere in Alaska. If you're shopping for someone outside, consider Northern Brewer. I used them for years until they were purchased by Anheuser-Busch. However, recently, they have been sold to a new company, and they are no longer owned by the Evil Empire, so I have started purchasing from them again. Second, if the beer lover in question is also a book lover, there are several recently released beer books which would make wonderful gifts. I've got four particular books in mind, each targeted towards a different group. The first book is from the Brewers Publications and is entitled Small Brewery Finance, Accounting Principles and Planning for the Craft Brewer. This is the perfect book for someone who is thinking of starting a craft brewery or has already opened one. As its name implies, it deals with all the financial aspects of running a small brewery, including things like balance sheets, income statements, budgeting, financial statements, and even how to write a business plan. Written by Maria Pearman, a CPA, it's certainly not for the casual beer lover. But for anyone considering making a business out of brewing beer, it would be priceless. While Small Brewery Finance targets a very specific audience, my second book choice is perfect for anybody. Drink Better Beer, Discover the Secrets of Brewing Experts by Joshua M. Bernstein is loaded with attractive photos and useful information. This is the fifth book by Bernstein on this subject and features the insights of more than 100 beer professionals, including competition judges, beer consultants, and master brewers. It describes how to shop clever by heeding two simple rules. From it, you can learn the art of selecting the right glass, of cleaning it, and executing the perfect pour. It'll help you make sense of beer aromas with just a couple of sniffing tricks. Reading it, you'll unlock the taste secrets of different styles, learn what to drink, and how to know if your favorite beer store is treating their beer the way they should. Drink Better Beer is a great book, one I thoroughly enjoyed and heartily recommend. My two final book recommendations are similar in that they are both cookbooks involving craft beer. First up, there's Lush, a season celebration of craft beer and produce by Jacqueline Dodd. This gorgeously illustrated book is full of recipes combining craft brews and vegetarian cooking, with special focus on using fresh, seasonal produce from local markets. As someone who helps run the Soldotna Saturday Farmers Market from June through September, I appreciate her making the effort to address this market segment, even if I myself continue to eat meat. If you've got a vegetarian craft beer lover on your gift list, you couldn't find a better gift for them than Lush. The other cookbook I'm recommending is The Beer Lover's Table, Seasonal Recipes and Modern Beer Pairings by Clara Bullen with Jen Ferguson. This book won the North American Guild of Beer Writers 2019 award for Best Book About Beer and Food. It's also profusely illustrated with sections covering a wider range of beer styles, from saisons and sours to IPAs, porters, and stouts. The recipes focus on using seasonal ingredients and pairing the dishes with different beer styles. In addition to the specific recommendations, there are general pairing rules to help you make informed choices about choosing a beer to pair with dishes not listed in the book. Books like The Beer Lover's Table didn't even exist a decade ago. We are so lucky that craft beer is finally being recognized as worthy to be paired with fine food. This book would make an excellent gift to any beer and/or food lover out there. Finally, for the ultimate gift for any beer lover, why not treat them to my college class, The Art and History of Brewing? I'll be teaching this class from January through April at the Kenai River campus of Kenai Peninsula College. Class meets every Tuesday evening from 5:30 to 6:45 p.m. and includes lectures on beer history, brewing science, historic beer styles, cooking with beer, storing and serving beer, and even pairing beer with food. We taste a beer every week, some 15 different beers over the course of the semester. We tour all three of the local breweries as part of the class. If you're interested, call 262-0243 for more information. Well, that's it for this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. I hope you've enjoyed it. Our final quote this month comes from the chairman of the board, the late, great Frank Sinatra, who said, "I feel sorry for people who don't drink. When they wake up in the morning, they're feeling as good as they're going to feel all day." Until next time, happy holidays and cheers.